May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart always be acceptable to you, Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay and leaves no steps had trodden back. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing that way leads on to back, that way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverge in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that makes all the difference. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that made all the difference. For many decades now, this poem has been one of my touchstones. I envision Robert Frost on a morning walk in the countryside in New England, facing an important decision and literally coming to that fork in the pathway. He stood there considering the choices, the coolness and moisture of the dew. He felt the coolness and moisture of the dew. He heard the rustling of the leaves as he walked. There was a light breeze, and the occasional leaf fell in front of him. He listened to the spirit. He discerned. One path obviously showed less wear than the other. It was the less popular route, maybe harder. He chose that one, knowing that in his heart it would be defining. Today I wish to focus on choices, forks in the road, beginning with the story of Esther, and then with the choices Jesus outlines in the gospel. The book of Esther, thought to have been written in the 2nd century BCE, is the story of Esther single-handedly saving the Jews from slaughter in 5th century BCE Persia. It is the foundational story to the celebration of the Jewish feast Purim, also known as the Feast of Lots or Feast of Esther. The cast of characters includes King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes I. His wife Esther, the queen, was originally from the small town in a distant district. She was beautiful, beguiling, and intelligent, and favored by the king. She was Jewish by birth, although this was not known to the king. Her uncle was Mordecai, a known Jew and official in the court. He became incensed when Mordecai repeatedly refused to bow and deter to him. As retribution to Mordecai, Haman convinced the king that all Jews were a rebellious threat to the kingdom and should be eliminated. By the throwing of lots, Adar the 13th was the date set for the genocide. A 75-foot-high gallows was built from which to hang Mordecai, high enough for Haman to view Mordecai's body from the dining room. One can imagine Esther standing in the proverbial fork in the road when informed of the plot. Should she do nothing and continue to live in comfort and anonymity? Or should she reveal her identity and seek to save her people? Esther chose the latter path, risking her life by approaching the king uninvited to suggest hosting a banquet that would include Haman. In doing so, she crossed the red line that could have led to her execution. This is the backstory of today's reading from the book of Esther. The king, clearly having had a great time at the party, wanted to show Esther his appreciation. He offered her anything she wanted, including half the kingdom. She revealed evil Haman's genocidal plot, and that as a Jew, she would be killed along with the others. The king rescinded the order to kill all Jews and had Haman hung on the gallows built for Mordecai. Choices. Esther found herself in the presence of power and chose to use that power for the common good. She was bold. She spoke truth to power. She spoke in the prophetic voice. The poor, weak, and disenfranchised had been saved that day. The last three verses of Esther read today chronicle the establishment of the Feast of Purim in celebration of saving the Jews from annihilation in Persia. It is a celebration of communal survival and salvation in gratitude for the actions of a woman and of our God throughout history. Eugene Peterson, the author of the Message Bible, many years ago made an interesting observation. He contrasts the irrepressible feast of community with which he characterizes Purim and the pursuit of happiness, which is our commercialized culture. He says, joy separated from its roots in God and pursued apart from the community of faith becomes mere sensation. The road less traveled is one traveled in community. Now I invite you to take a deep breath, maybe wiggle in your seat a little bit, because I'm going to talk about hell. In today's gospel, Jesus talks about hell. This is a well-known reading from Mark's gospel, which in some ways is unfortunate. As such, there's a tendency to skip over some of the difficult portions and dismiss the statements about plucking out one's eyes and chopping off a limb. I want to explore the hell Jesus was talking about in the context of the greening Anglican season of creation liturgy we are celebrating this month and this day. Jesus was speaking of a place well known to his audience. It is the archetype for hell. It is a place that I have seen with my own eyes. Today, if you stand at a site said to be Caiaphas's prison at the southern part of the walled city of Jerusalem and look to the southeast, you will see a narrow valley, the Valley of Ben Hidden. In Jesus' time, within that valley was a site called Gehenna. Gehenna is hell. The Valley of Hinnom is referenced 13 times in 5 books of the Old Testament. In 2 Chronicles, the valley is referred to as a place of child sacrifice and sorcery, an abomination. Later, Jeremiah rebrands the site as the Valley of Slaughter. He prophesies that the valley would be used to stack the bodies of people of Judah killed by an invading army and left to rot. The image is that of total destruction, foul air and water, and perpetual fires. It is a place of no hope. In Jesus' time, Gehenna was a dump where bodies and waste were thrown and the detritus of humanity burned. Hell is a dump. It was composed of what humanity had misused, destroyed, and discarded. French writer Georges Bernanos stated in one of his writings that hell is to love no more. The hell Jesus was pointing to was separation from the love of God, each other, and the world God created. It was the loss of dignity, usefulness, and community. Taking it a step further, hell is our own creation. It is a place to be avoided and a place we should not construct. The authors of the New Testament, writing in Greek, appropriated the word Gehenna from its Hebrew origins 12 times to refer to hell. In 11 of those instances, the word is used by Jesus. As I mentioned before, we are celebrating the litany of the season of creation this Sunday. How ironic that today's gospel reading has Jesus equating hell with the destruction and desecration of creation, of all creation, including humans. Jesus was not referring to a future state of being, but rather the here and now of our existence. The people listening to those words could see the fires at night and experience the foul smells when the wind blew from the southeast. Imagination was not necessary to understand the words of Jesus in those days. Neither would his disciples later question the meaning of hell. Jesus presented his audience with a choice. They were a fork in the road. Will Wolleman paraphrases Jesus' statement as saying, take care, make your choices wisely, where you are headed. It would be better for you to let go of some aspect of your body or soul than to have both body and soul thrown into the garbage dump of eternity. Your life is precious. Don't let it be discarded on the trash heap of life. God doesn't make garbage. God made you. Referring to Robert Frost, I ask, which road do we take? The journalist Anthony Price once wrote, the devil himself had probably redesigned hell in light of information he gained from observing airport layouts. This bit of sarcasm invites us to laugh a bit at the many absurdities we experience today. It also leads to the question, what are the dumps we have created and threaten our existence? We live in a throwaway culture. We have thrown away the many gifts of our Creator, including ourselves, the land, the water, and air. We create mountains of trash that we try to hide. We bury them deep in the earth or dump them in the ocean to no avail. Did you notice that last week some of New Jersey's beaches were once again closed because of needles and syringes washing on shore? When we can do neither, we place it in the middle of a neighborhood of poverty. For many years, when Kathy and I lived in Indiana, we frequently dove to Chicago on I-65 and passed a mountain of garbage in Gary with fires continuously burning. And despite the prescribed topsoil, it really stunk. And I'll call your attention to the picture on the front of the bulletin. It was painted in 1886 by George Frederick Watts and is today hanging in the Tate in London. Look at the picture closely. Without looking at the title of the painting, I invite you to look carefully. The harpist sits with her eyes covered on a brown earth. There is no green or blue to be seen. A few thin clouds are found at the equator. Her clothing is tattered and dirty. Her exposed skin is wounded and bruised. There is one remaining string on her harp that can be plucked. Still, she is capable of responding to her call of being a harpist. The painting is entitled Hope, and over the years, many who have seen it, this image, have been inspired. Our service today celebrates creation with Christ at its center. Today's liturgy reminds us of our need to renew, repair, and restore our relationship with God, one another, and all of creation. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Amen.